And thanks to the organizers also for the opportunity to speak here. And thanks to everyone who's still awake at this time in the evening. So I'm trying to briefly connect Rydberg atoms in Bose-Einstein condensed environments with bubble chambers in particle physics. But actually the main part of the talk will be more about open quantum systems and decoherence and how one might possibly see some things that can't be seen in other platforms when putting these together. Right, so I'd like to start with that little map that shows the conference venue and where I come from on the same page. And it's actually difficult to put Bhopal and Waterloo onto the same side of the planet. It seems it's just down there. So I didn't want to show the skyline of Bhopal, but I really like to show the picture of wildlife that sometimes can be found on the campus fence. On this audience, I guess I don't have to convince too many people that it's great fun to put things like ions, atoms, and molecules into an ultra-cold gas or Bose-Einstein condensate, or actually having them there at the beginning. Lots of interesting physics can be done. Sort of what I want to focus on in this talk is the specific combination of having a Rydberg atom excited in the Bose-Einstein condensate, and then looking mainly actually at the response of the Bose-Einstein condensate and applications to decoherence. Right, so just as a brief reminder of what actually causes decoherence, which is, well, the I guess main one main obstacle to all these quantum computing applications we had seen earlier today, right, is that any qubit that has two basis states 0 and 1, that's all good and fine as long as it's there by itself. Once there is any environment that it might interact with, and I have an interaction Hamiltonian that is sensitive to the qubit state, right, so these H0 and H1 act on the environment but are different, then the linearity of Schrödinger's equation or the many-body Schrödinger equation forces after a short time, or after some time, the overall state of the qubit and environment to entangle in this way. Right? So here this capital psi zero is whatever many-body state this environment had when it interacted with the qubit in state zero, and capital psi one is the same if it had interacted with qubit in state one. Right? So now for any bipartite qubit environment state of that form, if I now go to the reduced density matrix of the qubit by tracing over the environment, you get this overlap of these two environmental states in the coherence matrix element. So as soon as this many body state has become orthogonal, your coherence is gone. Right, so brief, I mean, in a little while we get to what that has to do with Rydberg atoms in BEC. Right, we already had seen that or heard that comparison of the Rydberg atom size and a virus. Right, so here the point will be that if I have an environment that even sits inside the Rydberg atom, then this large range will just cause a much larger effect on that environment. So if I want to see decoherence rather than avoid that, that might be cool actually. And then I guess the Bose-Einstein condensate, for me, the main advantage is as a theorist, that's much nicer than other things. Right, so instead of some complicated many-body wave function that has three spatial degrees of freedom for each particle in the gas, I can just assume I have that tensor product where each of the capital N particles sits in the same spatial orbital phi. I then derive this mean field equation called Gross-Pitevsky equation to describe now all these atoms synced into the same giant matter wave, say. Right? And that just looks like Schrödinger's equation with the addition of that nonlinear term here that comes from S-wave elastic scattering of these ground state atoms. Right? But the key advantage now compared to, of course, the initial guy here is it's a 3D wave function, no longer a 3 to the power n one, right? But still I have one complex coherent wave function that now describes all these atoms in the gas. And so as environments go, this is a nice one, I'd say, for theory description. Right, so these experiments have been done in various contexts, exciting a Rydberg atom in a BEC. Right, I guess most of them excited in an ultra-cold gas. BEC is a lot colder, so really these are now extreme atoms in an even more extreme environment. And now in the main part of the talk, I essentially focus on two things. First, we have a Rydberg atom in a single electronic state, and I briefly go through the sort of main impact it has on the Bose-Einstein condensate from the point of view of the Bose-Einstein condensate. But the main part will be on having superpositions of two different internal electronic states of the Rydberg atom in the BEC. Right, so this figure has been taken from the experimental paper from the Stuttgart group, where you see these, I think it's 100,000 atoms BEC, and a very large principal quantum number Rydberg excitation where these, for example, red sphere is actually the size of the Rydberg electron orbit. Right, so you get into that bizarre corner of parameter space where there's hundreds or thousands of ground state atoms inside the Rydberg electron orbit. And I guess the reason why that doesn't die immediately is that at these ultra cold temperatures, really nothing there actually has the energy to kill it. Right? So what experiments find is you put that Rydberg atom in the BEC, nonetheless, it mostly remains a Rydberg atom with some sort of lifetime reduction of factors of 2 or 10, right? Not totally catastrophic. But we had also already seen what the main interaction now is between this ground state atom in green and the Rydberg atom in, that's the iron, and the blue is the Rydberg electron wave function. And so the Rydberg electron does this elastic S-wave scattering of the ground state atom here. So overall, the potential between ground state atom and Rydberg ion, say, is that Rydberg electron wave function times some negative interaction constant. So it has that sort of peculiar, highly oscillatory character, and is overall seemingly net attractive. Right? And you all know that one can then excite these ultra-long-range molecules there, and et cetera. Right? But it could also not excite those, so essentially try to excite the Rydberg atom on the Rydberg line, maybe with a mean field shift, such that one doesn't, at least at the beginning, excite molecular states. Right? So then from the point of view of the BEC, this should pop up as an external potential. Right? So here I again have the kinetic energy, the nonlinear self-interaction of the Bose-Einstein condensate, and the interaction with one Rydberg impurity just pops up as an external potential, the shape of which is the Rydberg electron wave function. Right? And then to first order or at short times, all that does is change the phase of this complex wave function for the Bose-Einstein condensate. Right? You get your usual e to the minus IET factor from the quantum evolution popping up there. Right? So if I just plot the phase of the Bose-Einstein condensate after some little while, this will reflect simply the structure of the electronic state of the Rydberg. And then, for example, it will be different if I'm putting an S Rydberg state or P Rydberg state into the BEC. And in these short times, I mean, in this approximation, it doesn't change the BEC density at all. Any change of the phase is then later converted into density perturbations. Right, so, for example, in some older work, we've simulated what happens now if 5 Rydberg atoms are repelling due to van der Waals interactions. They first, on short microsecond timescale, they paint a sort of pi phase stripe onto the condensate while they're moving here. Then they're out, and on a much larger millisecond timescale, this phase patch converts into possibly measurable density stripes. Right, so this reminded us a lot of this bubble chamber from particle physics, right, in that some sort of high energy object is tracked through its impact on a much lower energy medium. So here, this simulation, however, was two-dimensional. Right? So then the sort of relative impact of the Rydberg atom on the BEC, I think, is relatively large. Right? So if I now would want to see that in 3D, one has to be a little bit more brutal. Right? So we've been modeling what happens if you try to excite a Rydberg atom in the center of a gas repeatedly, right? So mimicking ongoing experiments. The Rydberg atom is put in for some sort of few microseconds, then assumed out, and excited again. I have no idea why this is happening. I feel completely innocent. Every time the Rydberg atom might appear at a slightly different place, right? And we've done these three-dimensional simulations of the Gross-Peter-Evsky equation and found sort of, in general, what one finds is that these BEC atoms are attracted towards the center and form some few percent excess column density. Right? That's probably not so surprising if you look at this potential that should attract the atoms towards the center. And the overall size of that sort of impact feature is also optically resolvable. If you do these, I mean, these potentials are relatively strong compared to the usual Bose-Einstein condensate energy scales, so one could suspect that maybe this mean field description that we started with actually ceases to be valid. Right, so to do that, we did one of the largest eating up of computer time of my career, and did three-dimensional truncated Wigner simulations of this problem. That is a way in which you can model the condensate and thermal or uncondensed excitations around. And those say, okay, we are heating the condensate up at the center, so stuff moves from condensed to uncondensed. But overall, that fraction is still relatively small. Right? So the GP, I would say, should remain valid. And also the sort of net feature and the total density really just again looks like this, with a density increase in the center. With that, I want to leave the single Rydberg state impact on a BEC and go to, let's assume we have two different ones. Right, so essentially, one would excite the Rydberg atom in the S state and then drive a short microwave pulse until I have a superposition of S plus P. Right, so now, I had already shown you that, of course, the imprinted phase on the condensate and therefore later also density perturbations depend on the electronic state. Yeah, but I have only one mean field for the BEC, so that would have to pick. Or one would suspect now I really have to go beyond mean field physics. Right, so we started more or less from scratch with some nasty many-body field operator involving three atomic states, ground state, S states, and P states. And then I inserted that usual expansion of the Bose-Einstein condensate into mean field plus Bogolyubov excitations. Right, so these are essentially quantum sound waves. Indicated that here with this cartoon arrow with wave number Q. And then after lots of pain for the PhD student, in the end, you get something that's a sort of paradigmatic open quantum system model called spin boson Hamiltonian. Right? I have one pseudo-spin for the Rydberg atom in S or P. It's coupled to a bunch of harmonic oscillators, namely these phonons. And in the coupling term, we can calculate the interaction constants. And then when I want to throw open quantum system techniques at something like this, for example, to calculate decoherence times, and so what always goes into those is the environmental autocorrelation function. Right, so you take that operator here from the environment sitting in the coupling term, so in this case something like B plus B dagger for the phonon for the phonons in the system, correlate that with itself after some delay time tau. Right, and that tells you sort of two things. Right, so where it drops off to zero, that's the environmental memory time. Right, and you see here that's considerably longer than typical Rydberg lifetimes or physics can be, say, at least. Right, so that sort of suggests this might be a non-Markovian environment where sort of information goes into the environment, might act back on the Rydberg later. Second information is if I take the sort of correlation function at time zero and plug it into this formula, I get at least an estimate of decoherence timescales. And if you do that, we get that large range that man might suspect from Rydberg physics, that at principal quantum number 40, it's 20 nanoseconds. At 120, it's 1 microsecond. Right, so, and okay, I don't claim that we have all decoherent sources in this platform in here, but I'd hope that at least somewhere in this large range we do, right? So, and other things would be slower, right? And then one could measure this coherence between the SP superposition, say using microwave spectroscopy or microwave Ramsey experiments, and then have a handle on these other decoherent sources, and actually also on the BEC, right? So these coupling constants here depend on things like BEC density and mode structure. Then we wanted to do something a little bit more crazy, say. Right? So decoherence one can always measure, but typically almost all of these measurements are in the quantum system. Right? You don't do this measurement in the environment. Right? But here, because we have this extremely coherent environment to begin with, could there be a chance to see the fact that this mesoscopically entangled state that really is at the root of all decoherence, right, that here I can actually image that feature in the BEC. So the idea we came up with is you whack another pi half microwave pulse on the Rydberg. Right, I do that sort of transformation of the state. Say we measure the Rydberg and select all P measurements. Right, so after each of those, I have essentially projected my Bose-Einstein condensate itself into a superposition state. So that's now a superposition of this P imprint plus the S imprint, involving whatever thousands of atoms are in the orbital radius. Right, and then the question is, can one see this? Of course, I wouldn't ask if the answer, at least for theorists, wouldn't be possibly yes. Right, so what is shown here is the difference between the expected column density in this mesoscopic superposition state and the one you would have in a boring classical 50-50 mixture of this P imprint and S imprinted Bose-Einstein condensate. Right, and this is a sort of transient signal that you only see while decoherence develops. Right, you don't see it at the beginning, yeah, because these two guys are identical. Right, that's the state that actually hasn't interacted with impurity. And you don't see it after the qubit has already decohered. Right, and then for parameters that we choose to be, for theorist perspective, kind of realistic, it's a 3% signal in the column density. But of course, we sort of assume that the Rydberg atom always happens in the same location if you do repeat measurements, so that might be kind of hard. Okay, with that, I'd like to thank all the people involved in those various works, in particular these two guys here on the top left. For that, I have to wait for the picture to come back again, which were the PhD students whose projects you were seeing. Oh, come on, that's not fair. Yeah, well, them. And funding agencies. I thank the current group and you for your attention.
Okay, we have time for questions.
Thank you very much, Sebastian, for this interesting talk. I wonder what happens in the situation where your Rydberg atom is so big that you have many, many atoms inside, BC atoms inside the Rydberg. You should expect some normalization of the Bogoliubov spectrum in that case.
Yeah, so all these Bogoliubov modes we were using were just the normal ones for the homogeneous BEC with the kind of justification that all of this is a highly non-equilibrium situation, right? So I don't really expect the BEC to equilibrate around that Rydberg wave function perturbation, right? So I'm just starting with something that is an unperturbed, say, zero temperature BEC, and suddenly excite the Rydberg in there and look at dynamics.
I see, but these excitations take place in the presence of a very large object, which is this atom. So the wave function of the Rydberg atom is changing.
I mean, I can, right, so ultimately these Bogoliubov excitations are just the linearized perturbations around some state.
Right? I know.
And then we take the initial state of the BEC. Right? Then you put the Rydberg in, and you look at the time evolution.
Okay.
Right? So otherwise, I think what you're pertaining to, referring to is, if I was looking at the perturbations around the ground state in the presence of the Rydberg atom.
No, I was really looking at the excitation, the modification in the excitation sector. But we can discuss it later.
Maybe I'm not getting the question.
Still have time for questions?
I was just curious about this, your imposed potential from the Rydberg excitation. You're just multiplying by basically the Fermi pseudo potential with S wave scattering length. Are you including the energy dependence in this scattering length?
No. Right, so we've essentially neglected all nasty complications like energy dependence of the scattering length or the shape resonance.
Like
or
things like that. Overall attraction will disappear.
I mean, so,
and you'll have
so
a short.
So all of this, I would claim, doesn't change any of the concepts here. It just makes my life harder for the calculation.
This overall like kind of attraction into the higher density state would probably fall apart because you're going to.
I know. Okay. So
more,
sorry.
More
I mean that what I meant was pertaining to that. Why is it doing this? When I said we neglected all that, that was for the decoherence bit. Mm-hmm. In the first part regarding attraction to the center, we pretty much tried every variant of the potential you could imagine, including all those complications, and it's always the same thing. Right, so essentially, what the picture
even including
is,
I mean, like the P wave electron scattering.
I can show you the backup slide on that actually, if I can find it. Right, so we essentially tried using only S wave, then doing the diagonalization with momentum dependent scattering length, taking the classical average of all of this. Right, so ignoring all these wiggles. And in all the cases, what you find is at short times, of course, it makes a difference, right? So here, the different like blue, red, et cetera lines, they are the BEC response in these for these various potentials. But if you look then at where you possibly want to compare at late times and further out, they are all the same, right? So essentially, whatever happens at these, I mean, in these large quantum numbers that we're looking at, which is 130, right, then that overall fraction of the volume where all these details matter, where these details change the potential over here, that's just not very large.
Okay.
Right, so they all give the same thing. They're just harder to model.
Yeah. Okay.
So I just want to see if I understand correctly. In that figure with the 4% density difference, you're saying that if you measure at the right time.
Which one, the decoherence thing or the attraction thing?
If you look at your conclusion slide, not that one.
Conclusion slide.
The last slide, there you go. And down on the right, A. I think
so
that was where you'd put it in a superposition state.
Yeah.
So you're saying that in an individual measurement, you would see the density distribution for an S state or a P state, and that's the difference between the two different realizations? Am I understanding?
Yeah, so really, this is the column density in that state. So I guess in a single realization, I honestly don't know what you'd see, right? So you'd have to average, which is why I said that it's obviously slightly problematic that we're putting the atom in the same place all the time, right? So what that would do, right? So you'd say you have to localize the Rydberg atom as much as you possibly can. And since the feature is like relatively large, I'd hope that something survives.
Okay, so that's the average of many, many measurements compared to the background.
I mean, so mathematically, I'm calculating the column density in this mesoscopically entangled state. Right? But then to actually get that, I guess I have to average. I didn't think actually about whether you could see anything in a single shot. Would have to.
Well, let's thank the speaker again.